Knowledge with Chris Graham.
This is indeed Street Knowledge, and I am Chris Graham, and thank you for listening to our podcast. And it's been a while since we've talked. I took a week. I wouldn't say I took a week off. I was in D.C. for a week working hard, keeping up with AFP, keeping up with the sports world, the news politics world, also serving in a sort of support role as my wife, Crystal, who is the state director, Virginia state director for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, was working hard on it. Advocacy Week, AFSP unleashed its state directors and volunteers on the Capitol last week to advocate for funding for mental health reform, among other things. Suicide prevention, obviously a big, big issue in this country as we learn more and more about the how mental health should have a sense of parity with physical health in the way we can treat and combat our health and work to improve our health across the board. I was there for that, but also got a chance, had the chance to at least try to set up interviews with some of our members of Congress, and I was able to land interviews with both Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, the two U.S. senators representing Virginia, both who are pretty powerful for minority party members. Tim Kaine, of course, ran for vice president last year on the Democratic ticket. Mark Warner is the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which you might think has a little bit of sway right now with the investigation in the 2016 elections. If you haven't listened to it already, we have a podcast separate. We were able to interview both of these guys, the two U.S. senators representing Virginia, and a separate podcast. We have the interview we did with Mark Warner last week. This podcast you're listening to, you clicked on a link. It says Tim Kaine's name on it, so you're listening to us getting ready to talk with Tim Kaine. And the Mark Warner interview we did focused on the investigation into Russia hacking in the 2016 elections. This Tim Kaine interview took a very different tone. We interviewed Tim late last week, and Senator Kaine is working very hard to provide some Democratic leadership on healthcare reform, and that's an important issue right now. If you read the news headlines, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you're somewhat of a politics junkie, if not hardcore. You know that the Senate is working, the Senate Republicans are working on their own healthcare reform package that, as of right now, when I'm talking on this podcast on Tuesday of this week, it's Tuesday, June 20th as we're recording this podcast, their goal is to have something for senators to begin reviewing on Thursday, June 22nd. I'm not sure. That's a quick deadline. But they've been working on that. Senate GOP leaders have been working on that pretty much on their own without input from Democrats. Tim Kaine is efforting, and he's one of many Democrats efforting, to have Democrats have some voice in this. I mean, the Senate, it's not like our government is supermajority Republican. The Senate's 52-48 Republican-Democrat. It's a very close division in partisan lines. Tim Kaine, you'll hear in this interview, will actually talk about how, hey, Republicans, they only need three Republicans to peel off from whatever package is put through, and Democrats all of a sudden wield a lot of power in what happens in terms of a Senate health care bill. Now, we all know that the House has passed its own health care bill, but if you don't know how Congress works, the two houses of our Congress – To have a bill get to the president, they have to pass the identical bill. So the House bill that's passed has its own language. The Senate's working on what's, at least reportedly, we don't know. It's a secret bill. We don't have any details of it. But we have to assume that it's going to look very different in lots of key ways from the House bill. So assuming that the Senate is able to pass legislation for a health care reform, it would have the House and Senate leaders would have to negotiate between the two different versions of the bill, and then each House would then have the ability would have to vote on that compromise legislation, and not make any changes to that compromise legislation afterwards to get something to the president's desk. And this is all under, you'll hear Tim Kaine talk about this, the internal self-imposed deadline from Senate GOP leaders is to have this done before July 4th. That timing for that being that just like in real life, you know, you know, families take vacations in the summer and, you know, before school starts back in August and September, depending on where you are. The Senate does the same thing. The month of July is work being done in the Senate, but not a lot. And then the month of August is a recess month, at least on paper. It's a recess month for the Senate. And so this July 4th deadline, which is only a couple weeks away, obviously, is very important. If the Senate wants to sort of move on, I mean, you know, President Trump has talked about healthcare reform being a priority, but tax reform being a priority, and of course a number of other domestic policy changes that he wants to see enacted. And really, this healthcare was supposed to be a quick and easy first step, and it's not proven to be the case. We're already into the summertime now, and we're still not seeing any movement. So, that all said, what Tim Kaine is trying to do is inject some democratic realism into the process. And we'll talk about some of his ideas, and let's go ahead and let him actually lead us through that discussion, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk some more here on the podcast.
So let's talk some healthcare then.
Yeah, good. I think the next two weeks is going to be really intense.
So the legislation introduced this week, the Healthcare Insurance Marketplace Act. Let's talk about that. Talk about the impetus behind that.
So my whole thing is, let's not repeal the Affordable Care Act. Let's find things that aren't working, whether it's in the Affordable Care Act or just healthcare, like prescription drug prices. Mm-hmm. Let's find things that aren't work and put in meaningful solutions to improve. And I've really been encouraging the Republicans to drop the repeal effort and let's focus on the fix effort. And if they want to call that a replacement, I don't care. You can call it a replacement if you like. I'll call it an improvement. One of the areas that is kind of most important to fix is the individual marketplace. So, and you know, in Shenandoah Valley, this will be a lot of folks, people who don't get coverage through their big employer. A lot of farmers are in this position. You're buying on an individual marketplace. Maybe you get an Obamacare subsidy, maybe you don't, but you're basically buying for your family without a large group. And the individual marketplace has been pretty unstable. So premiums have been going up, and there are some parts of the country where insurers have been pulling out, leaving very little choice. The individual marketplace was tough before the Affordable Care Act passed. If you were trying to get it not through an employer, it was not easy. But how do you stabilize it? So Tom Carper, who's on the Finance Committee, I'm on the Health Committee. These are the two committees that sort of have jurisdiction over healthcare matters. We decided, well, why not stabilize the individual marketplace through a very common tool that is successful and that Republicans and Democrats both like, which is reinsurance. And the notion is, at some level, if a claim gets too high, there's like a backstop to cover it so that insurers don't have to price for the high claims. They can more price for the average claims, and then they know there's a federal backstop to take the high claims, and that keeps everybody else's premiums down, and it gives insurers more stability. Insurers now are dealing with such uncertainty because the Trump administration, we're going to repeal Obamacare, we're not going to make the cost-sharing payments to insurance companies, they've refused to enforce certain aspects of it, so they're very uncertain. That's one of the reasons they're pulling out. Reinsurance fund would give them some certainty so they could stay in. And the thing about it, Chris, that we like is Tom Carper and I, we wrote this bill to solve a problem, but to do it in a way where Republicans would look and say, well, that's not a poison pill for us. We use reinsurance in Medicare Part D, which was created under President Bush. We use the same exact technique, and we have for over 10 years under Medicare Part D, to hold costs down, and it's worked. When the Affordable Care Act was passed, there was a reinsurance provision that lasted for the first 3 years, and then it expired. That worked. So we can show you, this is an idea that you know, this is an idea that you supported, and it's proven and it works. So that's why we put it in, but the timing was important. This is the moment between now and the end of June where the Republicans in the Senate have to decide, are we really going to try to do this just on our own? No hearings from patients, providers, insurance companies, no public hearings, no opportunity for Democrats to propose amendments. Are we really going to do it all on our own, and what's the chances if we do that we'll really fix anything, or are we going to open up the processes and consider amendments? And so not only did we file it and I gave the speech, but I hand-carried the bill around to a bunch of Republicans yesterday. I said, this is something that you've supported in another context. This could work. This could be an answer to our challenge, and I hope that will open the door for some meaningful dialogue about fixes that both parties can join in.
I was going to ask about that, your sense of how Senate Republicans are
their level of reception to openness to Democratic ideas?
There's 52 Republicans, and they have to get 50. If they want to try to do it just with Republican votes, they have to get 50 and then count on the vice president to break a tie. So they can only lose two. They have some Republicans who don't like the House bill because it's not conservative enough. They have a bigger group of Republicans who think the House bill, in the words of President Trump, is too mean. So they're having a hard time finding it. You know, if they thought they could easily find a bill that they could do on their own, they probably would do that. But I was heartened yesterday as I'm taking this bill around. Oh, I'm glad you filed that. I hope we get the chance to talk about this. The chairman of the HELP committee, Senator Alexander, seemed excited about it. So there's still a chance, and our leader, Chuck Schumer, thinks it's about a 50-50 chance if they'll just do their own thing. But my prediction is if they do, we're going to be right back talking about a healthcare system in crisis 8 or 10 months from now. A lot of people are going to be furious because millions of people will lose health insurance. And we'll be right back talking about it. So if we're going to talk about the fixes, why not talk about it now?
Because, yeah, the public didn't respond very well, it didn't seem, to the House bill. That
House bill, very unpopular. And remember, the Senate might come up with a bill that's better than the House bill, but the standard we should be shooting for is President Trump's promises. Nobody's going to lose coverage. Nobody's going to pay more. Nobody with a pre-existing condition is going to get kicked around. I'll vote for any bill that meets those three criteria, but the likelihood of this secretly drawn-up Senate bill meeting that criteria with no hearings and no opportunity for Democratic amendments is virtually zero.
You're speaking tomorrow to Mental Health America, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm here this week as well because of a push for suicide prevention research.
Chris's wife was up here the other day with a group on suicide prevention research.
And so talk about what you'll be talking about with MHA tomorrow and generally about the mental health issue.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that was true to some extent about the Affordable Care Act, but the implementation is the question, is that it required mental health parity. So mental health should not be treated as sort of a second-class physical condition to physical health issues where, you know, you can go to a hospital after an accident and you're not required, you can only have 3, you know, days of care a month or something like that. Mental health should be treated with parity. That was a good thing about the Affordable Care Act. However, just saying that doesn't magically create mental health services sufficient to provide those services to people. And we know from tragic instances in Virginia, whether it was the shooting at Virginia Tech or whether it was the sad situation with Cree Deeds' son, that, you know, you can have a good law, but if there are not ample services, you know, the law doesn't really mean anything. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about what I think we've achieved with the Affordable Care Act and why going backwards would be so dangerous, but also be candid about areas where we haven't yet done everything we can. And so that's certainly going to mean the amount of treatment, efforts to prevention, reducing stigma, closely related issues like opioid substance abuse, that, you know, this is no time to be going backward. We've started down the path where we're dealing with the stigma in a better way. We are providing more services and coverage than we used to, but we have a long way to go.
Normalizing things, basically. I mean, like Crystal will say, if a person dies of suicide, you know, people will still use the term committed suicide, but if a person dies of a heart attack, it's not like, you know, people will say, well, what was wrong? You know, why didn't you fix your heart? You know, right. Fixing your brain, essentially, mm-hmm. and we don't treat it the same way.
I had not thought about that. That verbal formulation, but you're right, that betrays a...
She puts it a lot better than I do.
Yeah, but I never thought about it. And it betrays, viewing it in a very different way. And that's part of the problem. I have a boy in the military, and the military is really trying hard to reduce the stigma of seeking mental health care. The warrior ethos has been made it very tough for people to seek care. And then we have an epidemic of military and veteran suicides and things like that. And I'm proud of the Pentagon. I think they've embraced this and they're really working hard on it. But we got a long way to go still to deal with the stigma issues.
Fun discussion there with Tim Kaine. You know, I didn't write about the part about mental health in a story on Augusta Free Press, but he was speaking. I think I maybe mentioned this in the podcast when we were talking with Tim Kaine in his office last week. He was speaking the next day. I interviewed him on Thursday last week. He was speaking on Friday one of the keynote speakers at the Mental Health of America conference. And the talk about mental health parity, very important. I mean, for especially for what I was in town for last week in support of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention's efforts. But yeah, the reinsurance proposal that he is helping push, very interesting, you know, idea. And it's one of those things where, you know, on the campaign trail, when you're watching CNN or Fox or MSNBC, whatever you watch, whatever you read, you know, you hear about either repeal Obamacare or you hear about single payer, you hear about keep things the way they are, et cetera, et cetera. You don't hear a lot of specifics. This reinsurance idea is a really interesting idea. It's the kind of idea that, you know, it's nuts and bolts. It's very, you know, it's inside baseball a little bit, but the idea that, you know, the government could provide a guarantee that could, you know, provide that benchmark for people that, especially those who aren't, are, you know, who don't work for companies that provide insurance. You know, if you're self-employed, a lot of folks are, maybe between jobs, that kind of thing. You know, it's hard. It's been hard. I'm self-employed. I haven't had, honestly, I haven't had health insurance until my wife got this job this year with AFSP. I'll be honest about that. We just didn't get sick, I like to say. And of course, we did get sick. We just weren't able to deal with it very well. It's expensive to do it on your own. And so this reinsurance proposal can maybe cut the cost down for those who are in that situation. Tim Kaine mentioned farmers are in that situation too. Virginia, a very robust agricultural economy. And so this is just one of many ideas on a concrete policy proposal area that, you know, you want to think that our leaders in Congress are thinking through details like this. I'm not sure too many are, you know, after the House passed its Obamacare repeal a couple months ago. You heard from quite a few Republican leaders that they hadn't even read the bill that they voted for. All they heard was repeal. They liked the idea of repeal. They voted for repeal, and nuts and bolts weren't very important to them. One thing I'll say, and you know, kind of weaving both of the interviews I did last week with Mark Warner and Tim Kaine, both these guys are guys that, you know, they don't, when I'm talking with them sitting in their offices, they're not sitting there with notes. They don't have a staffer that they huddle with when I ask the question and, you know, kind of whispers the answer in their ear. These are guys who live and breathe this. I didn't prep either one of the guys I sat down with last week as to what questions I was going to be asking. They know this stuff. And that's the impressive part, that you can, you know, start talking about the merits of reinsurance as a part of healthcare reform and getting the nuts and bolts of this. And Tim Kaine, you know, between meeting with constituents for a photo op and getting ready at 2 o'clock, I think he had a meeting with a group of Muslim American leaders in Virginia about something completely different than what we were talking about. He's rattling off, you know, very specific details about reinsurance. That's the kind of leaders you want. You want people who don't need someone to tell them what the right answers are, and they're not just regurgitating to you talking points. You know, this is something that they know intimately and can wake up in the middle of the night talking about. And that's how we were talking about healthcare reform and also the mental health issue that we talked about towards the end there. So very impressed with Tim Kaine. Now, if you listen to, or if you're getting ready to listen to my Mark Warner podcast, you hear at the end of that, after we interview Mark Warner and come back to wrap things up, you hear me talk about how Mark Warner has a lousy office situation. And when I met him in 2012, he had a much better office, much better location, et cetera, et cetera. And now he's stuck in the corner on the top of the furthest away building from the Capitol. Tim Kaine has more clout. He's on the first floor of the Russell Center office building, right there closest to the Capitol. Very accessible. He's got a nice suite of offices. I mean, I don't know. Tim Kaine's got some friends there. Or he won a lottery for his office or something like that. He had a very nice office, and he was very gracious. Both senators, both their staffs, man, you know, to give little old Augusta Free Press time during this very, you know, last week, a very important week in D.C., to give us time to sit down and talk about some policy specifics about the Russia investigation. We're very thankful that we had the opportunity to do that. And, of course, hopefully you're thankful that you had the chance too. And that's why we're presenting these podcasts. you know, it's one thing for me to type up the transcripts and write stories out of these interviews. I think you learn a lot about somebody when you hear them talk, you hear them think out loud. That's why we're presenting these podcasts to you. So thank you for taking the time to listen and learn a little bit more about the two men in the U.S. Senate representing Virginia. If you're a Virginian and you voted for them, you got your money's worth. If you didn't vote for him, maybe think about it in the future. I think Tim Kaine, after we were done with our podcast, talked about, hey, 2018 for him is not very far away. He got elected in 2012, so his term comes up in 2018. And he's not too far off from having to think about his reelection battle. So thank you again. Thanks again to Tim Kaine and his staff. Thanks to Mark Warner and his staff. And thank you for listening. And we'll get back to the important stuff. We'll talk some sports later this week on some podcasts. And more politics, I'm sure, some news. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to get out there into. But for now, signing off for Street Knowledge, I am Chris Graham. Have a great night, everybody.